Training Alive with Rita Steele, thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners.
Hello, Rita.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Did you enjoy that little bit of Anthony Tonin's Water Underground?
Oh, I did now.
I thought it was timely. It was good. Great. It was good for us to play that just before this, because what are we talking about? A water crisis.
Yeah, we're talking about the looming global fresh water crisis. Which some say is looming and others say we're sort of already in the midst of. So, and with more and more countries kind of declaring that they are reaching day zero, which is the day they run out of water, fresh water for their municipal supplies, then that's kind of happening more and more around the world. So I thought we'd have a quick chat about fresh water.
Which countries are suffering from this water crisis?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of them, but the big ones that kind of are really kind of shocking people is Australia. So they are a lot of towns are running out of water and kind of almost shutting up shop over there. Others have got are approaching day zero. When I chatted to my nan the other day, who was in just outside of Newcastle, she said that the town near them had just run out of water and they were having to share water with that town. Meaning they were having their own water shortages because all of a sudden they've, had a lot less water than they've had in the past. And so it's sort of starting to hit people in Australia on the ground. We've seen lots of South American countries, Brazil, and Bolivia have had issues, but a UN report has just come out and said that the US is going to have some major issues. So those are kind of the main countries. There is a school of thought as well that Syria's civil war has actually been, triggered by a lack of water. So they had the driest, they had a big drought, the largest drought that's ever been recorded for that part of the world. From 2011, I think it was, 2007 to 2010, and that saw a lot of rural folk move into cities because they couldn't, run their fields anymore. And that once they were in the cities, they sort of became marginalised. There was no opportunities for them, no resources for them to tap into. And that's when, a lot of the younger people got radicalised and sort of angry that they didn't have these opportunities. So a lot of people sort of, there's some academics that believe that that's actually what kind of started the situation in Syria. It's a little bit dire for lots of places. Even New Zealand, we've got some areas that are running out of groundwater. Mm. So definitely something that was going to impact us, all of us in the not too distant future.
Can we not just solve this problem with a big desalination plant? Is the technology getting any better for that?
I knew you were going to ask that. I thought it might come from Hungary, but desalination is very expensive. So it's about 7 times the cost of treating fresh water. And it's actually very ecologically damaging because you've got to put the salt somewhere. So, and then all of a sudden what you're doing is dumping that onto ground and then it's going into your groundwater and creating a bigger problem and making, lots of usable land unusable. So desalination isn't really an option, although Israel's had some great use with it, but it's used as part of an integrated sort of system rather than, and I think it's sort of a desperation point kind of thing. Coca-Cola use it in some parts of the world, but they've said it's not economically feasible for them to do that in many places.
Now, I mean, what does a water crisis look like for New Zealand?
Well, it's going to... I think we're really lucky in New Zealand because we do get a lot of water, but what I think people don't... We get a lot of rainfall, I should say. What I think people don't really realise is how rainfall actually sort of works. So California is a really good example of this. So they had a really big drought that affected them significantly. And there's a town over there called the San Joaquin Valley, and I'll post a picture of it because it's amazing seeing over the last 50 years how much that township's actually sunk. We're talking, 10, 20 metres, the whole city has sunk because their aquifers have been dried up. So they've been tapping into their groundwater, that once they suck out the groundwater, everything sinks. And we've seen that in Mexico City as well. We're lucky in New Zealand that we haven't got to that point yet, but that's something that we will have to keep an eye on. And so once you drain your water table, essentially, which is your groundwater, and then it rains. So in California, they finally broke the drought, and it rained, and it filled up all the rivers and all the lakes. So that was great. But because it's fast rain going onto very dry land, what happens is it usually runs off very quickly and fills those rivers and whatnot. But it doesn't soak slowly into the ground and refill the aquifers or the groundwater supplies. And that's the big problem that we have with climate change, is that we're going to get these big dry periods followed by big downpours. But what we don't want is these big downpours. We want slow, steady rain that slowly soaks into the earth and makes its way to the groundwater. And so that's what we'll find in New Zealand, is that we'll get these really big downpours, but we can't capture it fast anywhere, really. So that's something that, you know, is a big challenge for us in the next sort of 30 years that hopefully we'll find some solutions for.
It seems like we had a really dry summer last year, and then we've sort of had a wet winter, but it certainly feels like it has been pretty dry the last, you know, month or so.
Yeah, and I think we're really lucky that we had that kind of wet winter. If we had come off that dry summer and then had a dry winter, which we've had in the past, like we've had dry winters, so if we sort of got those in a row and then gone into another dry summer, we would have been in real trouble. I know the Waitakere dams, which I think there's 5 or 7 of, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were all getting to kind of desperation point, and Watercare were about to kind of press the panic button on that, and then it started raining. I think it was about June, and that refilled them, so that was really lucky. But had that not happened, we'd be going into a summer where we would all be on water shortage, restrictions, and that's something that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the next 5 years to Auckland.
Now, Rita, I mean, I guess sort of a hot topic is exporting bottled water from various springs throughout New Zealand. What do you think about that? Where do you sit on that one?
Yeah, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. The giving away something for free is a little crazy. Overseas, some of the ways that they have solved this is by putting a price on water, and I know that there's such a big pushback on that, but the moment you do put a price on it, it means that you can kind of one, charge for things like, you know, giving away your water, but also you can actually make better decisions about what that water has been used for. So at the moment we may be using, you know, some of the best quality water to irrigate a low value agricultural system. The last few years, that's been an example with something like, you know, intensified dairy. They can irrigate these areas that probably weren't really supposed to be used for dairy. Whereas if we had a price on it, then that land could be used for something, or the water at least would be used for something a bit more high value. So I think the bottled water thing is just a sign of how unprepared we are for the future in this kind of water crisis, because we're literally giving away our best water for free. It's very bizarre.
This seems like a massively vast issue. It seems like there's more than, you know, one thing at play. What are the key things that, if we're going to be thinking about the water crisis in general, I mean, where do we start as just
men? Yeah, so you've just got to think about the fact that although the planet is 70% water, only 0.5% of that is fresh water that we can drink. The rest of it is either salt water or locked up in ice. So, you know, it is a precious resource, even though it doesn't seem like it is. So the second thing that we really need to then look at is, what is it currently being used for? And 70% of it is being used for agriculture or food growing. And we also need to increase our food production by 60% in the next 20 years to meet population. So, you know, if you then start looking at that, then you kind of go, okay, well, the easiest thing to cut back on is that food production. So, you know, is there food that we don't necessarily need to grow, and things like soy for animal production, very high, you know, water needs. And for meat, again, it comes back down to, you know, we can cut back on our meat a little bit to help save, you know, some of that water.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is population increases, obviously. So, you know, there's things we can do around, like, building new houses and industry. So, you know, capturing rainwater in these new areas, or rainwater in tanks, or stormwater runoff. And using that, and a really good example is Singapore. 30% of their water needs come from stormwater collection, which is just awesome. You know, all that stuff that goes into the gutter and goes out to sea, they collect that and treat it. Obviously, dropping growth. I mean, I'm pretty sure every single conversation we have comes down to, you know, if we didn't have this ridiculous need for growth, growth, growth all the time, we wouldn't have these problems. And then the other one is recycling water, so treating and reusing water for things. So a really good example of this is Israel. They capture 86% of their water that goes down the drain, and they use it primarily for irrigating the agricultural land. So 40% of their agricultural land is irrigated using a recycled water, which is really good, especially seeing as, you know, that's a significant part of what we're using water for. So if we can recycle our water and pipe it to irrigation, agriculture, I think we'll, you know, solve a lot of these problems.
All right. I guess that's a good start. Someone's just messaging saying, F word dairy. And someone's also said, please give us some hope from a worried Aucklander.
I mean, you know, there's nothing, you know, we there's stuff you can do as well. Auckland's actually got a really good track record when we started metering our water use. Our water use went down. So there is a really good example there, and it's been repeated many times around the world that when you put a price per litre on something, or, you know, put a cost on something, people do treat it with a bit more respect. And we can give ourselves a pat on the back that we have done that as a city, and in the times that we have had to do water restrictions, we've actually done a really good job of meeting those requirements. So we're a pretty good city when it comes to the city supply. It's just about what do we do, you know, around the country. Places like Christchurch are really in trouble because their groundwater is being used to irrigate land, and that's where we'll see some of the bigger problems happening.
All right, Rita, we'll wrap it up there.
We'll
touch base with you next week.
Yeah, fantastic. So next time you have a glass of water, just think about how lucky we are to just get it out of the tap and not have to worry.
I know. All right,
exactly.
Rita.
You have a great week.
Okay, you too. Bye.
See you guys. Bye.
That was Sustaining Alive on 95BFM. Thanks to Kraft Homes, Homestar approved practitioners. Go to krafthomes.co.nz.